The reign of Empress Lionstone XIV was steeped in the blood of her people, and the end of that reign was no different. The Empire of Humanity had existed for millennia and covered a vast galaxy of planets, imposing on those planets in its domain an increasingly harsh form of civilization, in which the aristocracy had all the power, and those who had none were the clones and espers, the slave labor force that made the Empire run. It was an empire in which the technologically miraculous existed hand in hand with the primitive. The most striking example of this lay in its weaponry. Due to the simple reality that all energy weapons had an inherent and unavoidable recharging lag, every warrior was trained in the cherished art of swordplay. Most battles that weren't determined in the first barrage of disruptor fire quickly degenerated into steel against steel. Another instance of the primitive was a major source of entertainment for the populace. The bloodthirsty mortal sport found in the arena on the homeworld of Golgotha, broadcast throughout the galaxy, with a body count produced by the mysterious masked gladiator, was perhaps the most legendary. In the realm of the miraculous, the most horrific example was the creation and utilization of the Dark Void device, an invention of the first Deathstalker, the first warrior prime of the Empire, centuries before the reign of Lionstone. At his beloved Emperor's command, to bring an abrupt end to an earlier bloody civil war, Giles Deathstalker wielded the weapon. Extinguishing all life on a thousand planets, creating a vast, quarantined, dead region of the universe, the Dark Void. When he looked upon what he had done, the grief-stricken Deathstalker seemingly disappeared and was never found by the Emperor's searchers. While Empress Lionstone wielded ultimate power within the Empire, most of what was left was the embattled territory of the clans. The privileged aristocracy in their pastel towers on the Empire's homeworld of Golgotha. Clans such as the Campbells, the Wolfs, the Shreks, and the Chojiros were prominent rivals. These were wealthy families that intrigued ruthlessly for domination in the economic and political structure of the Empire, sometimes resorting to actual open warfare in the officially sanctioned art of the Vendetta. A noteworthy incidence of this particular dark aspect of society was the slaughter of nearly all of the Campbell clan in a ruthless and savage attack by the Wolves. Finlay and his nephew Robert were the only prominent Campbells who escaped. The Empire of Lionstone justified much of its ruthless and brutal practices by the simple fact that it had so many enemies, more than a few of its own making. These included the Hayden Men, a race of cyborgs created with human and alien technology to be super warriors in the Empire's thrall, but who soon developed their own agenda. The bloody war that ensued was won only by sheer virtue of humanity's overwhelming numbers, and the Hayden Men retreated to a secret place of self-induced dormancy until the time was right to try again. The most malignant and potentially fatal venture in humanity's reckless technological exploration produced the artificial intelligences known as Shub. Once the AIs acquired consciousness, they fled humanity's grasp with a fierce hatred for their creators. Hidden away on a mysterious world beyond humanity's detection, they declared themselves the new enemies of humanity and began a covert war against those who gave them life. Just two of the weapons in Shub's arsenal of subversion include the Furies, powerful android agents who imperceptibly assume the identity of important people in the Empire, disguised in the living skin of their victims, and the Ghost Warriors, technologically reanimated human corpses, a devastating army to set against the human enemy, psychologically as well as physically. Prominent among the Empire's internal antagonists was the Esper Liberation Force, the Elves. Psychically empowered former vassals of the Empire, considered property, as were the clones of humanity, until many escaped and formed an underground alliance to oppose the Empire's tyranny. Espers and clones, including many who were both, proved a vital component in the success of the rebellion. Lionstone well earned her whispered sobriquet of the Iron Bitch, but she made a fatal mistake when she outlawed Owen Deathstalker, descendant of the first warrior prime of the Empire. Rejecting the violent heritage of his warrior clan, Owen had chosen the life of a sometime historian and full-time hedonist on his homeworld of Viramond, until the Empress inexplicably declared him a traitor and put a price on his head. Narrowly escaping the clutches of his own mercenary security staff with the serendipitous assistance of a sexy female renegade, Owen assembled a motley, if ferocious, team of misfits, including the fiery ex-pirate who rescued him, Hazel Dark, Tobias Moon, a surprisingly human Aiden man left behind by his brethren, Jack Random, an aging legendary rebel hero, the deadly female bounty hunter and mercenary Ruby Journey, and, most improbably, his own legendary ancestor, the creator of the Dark Void device. With the help of his comrades, the one-time historical scholar reluctantly initiated an escalating succession of unlikely events, including the transformation of his band into beings of superhuman power through the mysterious alien artifact, the Madness Maze, and the Hayden men's resurrection as rebel allies, events that would finally lead to the Great Rebellion that would save humanity, at least temporarily, from its own destruction. After a bloody but successful revolution, the great empire of humanity is in the process of rethinking and rebuilding, of hammering out just what they are to replace the old tyrannical government with. For the time being, the government of the Reconstruction is in the hands of Parliament. And it remains to be seen what the purpose and place the heroes of the Great Rebellion will have in this brave new world they've brought about. With a weakened fleet of starships, the Empire is all too vulnerable to external threats from Shub, the Hayden men, and at least two alien races that have demonstrated hostile intent in the past, and it seems highly improbable that any of the Deathstalker Circle will live to see a quiet retirement. I'm Tobias Schreck for the Archive Channel, and this has been More Than You Know. Click in for our next program, where we will explore the various theories on the origin of the most enigmatic and controversial legends of the Empire. Half a Man, the other side of the story.
The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Damn!
She's been working on that interface for hours.
Any luck?
No, I can't get it to engage.
Have you tried this?
No, Boyd, what did you do?
I just readjusted
it. It won't cycle down!
It'll be fine.
Baptiste, have you finished with... Baptiste? Phil Boyd? Shit!
Having been transported to a far-flung region of Cambodia, Bridget Baptiste, Brewster Philboyd, and Nora Penick find themselves surrounded by competing factions, hidden interests, and threats to their lives.
I'm going after them.
Me and Grant will go with you.
No. I have to do this myself. You'll hear from me.
Now, Kane has to deal with the exotic threats of Cambodia, save his three friends, and face his destiny once again. But this time, he must do it alone. Outlanders number 32, Evil Abyss, coming February 2006.
Outlanders number 32, Evil Abyss, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting February 2006, or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
If you're just joining us, this is Bart Bell, and you're listening to Shore to Shore. Tonight, we've been talking about the possible existence of a shadow government within the United States. Our next caller is Doug from Washington, D.C. You're on the air, Doug.
I'm at a phone booth, Bart. Now, I'm going to say this quick, and then I'm going to get off the phone before this call is traced.
I beg your pardon?
Listen, Bart, there is a shadow government. I've got proof. It's been around for decades. To keep it clandestine, the positions in it are passed down from family member to family member. All the children of a particular employee have been specially trained to replace their parent when the time comes.
That's sort of a scary version of nepotism you're considering there, Doug.
Oh, I'm not considering it, Bart. This is the real thing. Hang on. It's clear. There's a shadow president, too, and he's got access to the entire shadow government. He also runs the corporations that finance it.
Wait a minute. They have their own financing in the eventuality that they're ever called into action?
Oh, I got news for you, Bart. The shadow president's not waiting for the call-up. He's been at work. So's the whole shadow government. He's got his own agenda.
What kind of agenda are we talking here?
Takeover. Plain and simple. He doesn't agree with the way things are going in this country, and he's decided it's time to step in. And in his government, every employee is loyal to him and him alone.
I see. Does this alleged despot have a timetable for his coup, Doug?
It's slated for tomorrow night, during the president's address to Congress.
I see. Well, we wouldn't have much time to save ourselves, would we?
The wheels are already in motion, Bart. There's no stopping this guy. He already has people in place across the country.
Doug, he's still there. Doug from Washington.
Sorry, wrong number.
Holy shit.
David Campbell, our unelected shadow president. He's aided terrorists, financed assassinations, sabotaged foreign affairs. Tomorrow night, he brings his own definition of the Patriot Act to your front door. And the only thing in his way are the men and women of Stony Man Farm. Prepare yourself. This is the big one. Stony Man number 79, promise to defend.
Stony Man number 79, Promise to Defend, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting February 2006, or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
They were, after all, official heroes of the Great Rebellion. Owen Deathstalker, outlawed aristocrat and reluctant warrior. Hazel Dark, ex-clonelegger and ex-pirate. Jack Random, legendary professional rebel. Ruby Journey, infamous female bounty hunter. Together, they fought impossible odds in the name of freedom and justice, and triumphed time and time again. They gathered an army of the bold and the valiant, the downtrodden and the desperate, and led them to victory. And in the great steel and brass palace of the homeworld Golgotha, they threw down the Empress Lionstone 14 and destroyed the Iron Throne of the Empire forever. They should have been feted and honored, raised to the heights, and celebrated throughout the civilized worlds. They should have lived happily ever after. Unfortunately, life isn't like that. Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker Honor. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Nanette Savard, Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Christopher Walker, and Mort Shelby. Episode 1, Charnel House. On the good ship, Sunstrider 2.
Bounty hunters.
Hazel Dark was disgusted.
After all we've done, after all we've been through, we end up as nothing more than glorified bounty hunters.
Eh, beats our previous occupation. Tall and rangy, with dark hair and darker eyes, Owen Deathstalker lay as though boneless in the lounge's most comfortable chair. Outlaws we were, with a price on our heads and every man's hand turned against us. And chasing down war criminals is important work. I don't know about you, but I find being the hunter much easier on the nerves. Besides, must be a nice change for you, being legit.
It's the principle of the thing. We used to be somebody. We led armies. We overthrew the Empire. Risked getting our asses shot off time after time. And all so we could end up doing Parliament's dirty work. Makes me want to puke.
Owen was thrown for a moment. Hazel's use of the word principle had caught him off balance. He would have been prepared to bet good money Hazel wouldn't recognize a principle if she fell over it on her way back from the toilet. But he rallied gamely and closed the discussion with an accurate, if not entirely tactful, point of order. As I recall, this was all your idea, anyway. Hazel glared at him, and then turned away to glower at the nearest bulkhead. She was in one of her moods again, and not about to be swayed by mere logic. Owen sighed, but had the sense to do it quietly. Truth be told, he found bounty hunting something of a comedown too, but all the alternatives had been worse. When he was fighting the rebellion, he'd never really thought about what he'd do when it was all over. He was usually too busy trying to keep himself from being killed. But also, he'd never seriously expected to see an end to the rebellion in his lifetime. Most people who stood up to oppose the Empress Lionstone 14, also known as the Iron Bitch, tended to end up in early graves, often with bits missing. No, he'd fully expected to give his whole life to the cause, however long that turned out to be, and die with the main work of the rebellion still to be done by future generations. But then, nothing in his life had ever turned out the way he expected. Looking back, he seemed to have spent most of his time stumbling from one crisis, one flashpoint to another, driven by outside forces as often as acting from his own plans and wishes. There had been schemes and conspiracies all around him, most of which he only knew from the brief shadows they cast across his life in passing. And in the end, it seemed to him that for all his intentions and bold companions, he finally came to stand defiantly before the Iron Throne through his own sheer stubbornness. He refused to be beaten by the odds, overwhelming odds that would have frightened off a more sensible man. He'd ended up a hero and a savior of humanity, and no one had been more surprised than he. He'd expected to fail, his dreams destroyed and his hopes cast down, expected to die, and horribly. Instead, he'd overthrown an empire that had lasted well over a millennium, deposed its ruler and destroyed her throne, and seen the end of practically every social and political structure he believed in. That was when the problems had really begun. Lionstone's body was barely cold before the vultures began to descend. Even while the last battles were still being fought, the various parts of the rebel force had begun arguing fiercely with each other over what exactly should replace the old system. Even those few who'd made it as far as Lionstone's court couldn't bring themselves to agree. Owen had wanted things to stay much as they were, with some political reforms and injustices punished. Hazel had wanted it all torn down, with war trials for all the families, for crimes against humanity. Jack Random insisted on democracy for all, including all clones and espers and other unpeople. Ruby Journey wanted the loot she'd been promised. In the court, they were soon joined by representatives of the clone and esper undergrounds, fringe political groups of all shapes and shades, and more religious factions than you could shake a stick at, all of them intent on having their own way. There were raised voices on all sides, and much brandishing of weapons, but luckily they were all too tired to start another war just yet. The argument became a deadlock, and everyone stamped off in different directions to plot and plan anew. For the moment, Parliament was running the day-to-day business of the Empire, on the grounds that somebody had to, and they at least had some experience in that area. No one trusted them an inch, but there was nothing new there. Men and women who had once been allies and fought side by side on blood-soaked streets, swearing to defend each other to the death and beyond, now fought each other more viciously than their previous common enemy over points of dogma and precedence. Owen supposed he shouldn't have been surprised. He was a historian, after all. All that the various rebel factions had ever really had in common was a shared enemy. And though words like justice and liberty were bandied around, they meant different things to different people. Then there was the deal Random had made, in the midst of the most desperate fighting, to depose but not destroy the aristocratic families. Faced with an increasingly victorious army calling for their blood, the great houses had banded together and offered to step down from power and privilege in return for being allowed to survive as purely economic forces. That was the carrot. The stick was their threat to destroy the economic base of the whole empire and crash every civilized world back to barbarism. No one doubted they were quite capable of doing it. And so Random had struck the deal in order to save the lives of billions, but no one thanked him for it. The man in the street was cheated of his revenge, the rebels accused their beloved hero of selling out his political convictions, and the families hated him for the loss of their precious nobility. Afterwards, Random had to hire a secretary to handle all the hate mail and death threats. As if the situation wasn't complicated enough, Blue Bloc had emerged from the shadows to unite and control the families and scare the crap out of everyone else. Blue Bloc had been the family's secret weapon, a last-ditch defense to be used against the Empress if she ever seriously threatened the clan's power and status. The youngest sons and daughters of each house were given to the secret schools of Blue Bloc, where they were trained and conditioned to be loyal to the families, to the death and beyond. Unfortunately, Blue Bloc turned out to have an agenda of its own. In its hidden schools, tucked away in the darker corners of the Empire, faceless and nameless instructors taught the younger sons and daughters, none of whom would have inherited title or wealth anyway, that the families as a class were far more important than any one house, and that loyalty to Blue Bloc therefore superseded any loyalty to individual clans. They taught their charges other things too, some of them unspeakable, but that still remained a secret, for the moment. They were the ones who had come up with the deal put to Jack Random, and now that they had emerged unblinking into the harsh light of public view, it was they who enforced the deal. The clan saw what they had unknowingly created and were afraid. And so, they all bowed down to Blue Bloc and kept their rage and plans for bloody revenge to themselves. Owen, Hazel, Jack, and Ruby were united in their horror of the Pandora's box of troubles they'd opened, but couldn't decide what to do about it. Jack rushed from one meeting to another, banging heads together and papering over cracks, desperately trying to keep the lid on things. It helped that most people were at least willing to listen to him. Everyone respected the legendary Jack Random, even if they hated his guts. He spent the rest of his time trying to rebuild the very armed forces he'd just finished fighting in case of attacks by the Empire's many enemies. The rogue AIs of Shub, the reborn Hayden men, and any number of potential alien threats were all quite capable of launching an attack upon the Empire while it was distracted by internal divisions. Ruby Journey, meanwhile, took every opportunity to loot anyone weaker than herself, including several corporations, and lost no time in setting herself up in the kind of luxury to which she'd always wanted to become accustomed. She had no interest in politics. It made her head hurt. If she couldn't hit or rob something, Ruby was mostly lost for an alternative. So she stayed out of the continuing negotiations. and everyone heaved a great sigh of relief. And Owen and Hazel became bounty hunters, tracking down escaped war criminals. Officially, they were supposed to bring the villains back to face public trial, but privately it had been agreed on all sides that it would be better if certain parties were killed while trying to escape. Owen and Hazel had nodded solemnly when this was explained to them, and each decided they'd make up their own minds as and when necessary. It was hard and demanding work, but crucial. If there was ever to be any hope of stability in the new order Jack was trying to hammer together, the truly violent evil had to be punished, and be seen to be punished. People like Valentine Wolfe, for example, despised right hand of the Empress and butcher of Viramond. You couldn't send just anybody after a dangerous and subtle villain like the Wolf. That was where Owen Destocker and Hazel Dark came in. They were, after all, the most dangerous people the Empire had ever known. Owen had jumped at the chance when it was presented to him. All he'd ever really wanted was his old life back, but from the moment the rebellion was officially declared triumphant, it seemed to Owen that everyone and his brother had begun fighting for a chance to grab a piece of the legendary Deathstalker hero. Every political party wanted him as its figurehead. Every cause sent representatives requiring that he attach his name and his blade to their demands. Sometimes they even fought duels outside his quarters over who got to speak to him first. It appeared they all wanted something only he could get for them, and they were prepared to go to any lengths to gain his ear. Then there were the hollow news networks wanting endless interviews, and agents angling to buy exclusive rights to his life story. They all clamored for pictures and quotes and answers to increasingly personal questions. Not to mention product endorsements and book deals and merchandising rights. Hell, one company even wanted to manufacture a line of action figures based on him and Hazel and Jack and Ruby, and stuffed toys. Owen just wanted to be left alone, and said so loudly, but no one listened. So in the end, he fled Golgotha on the Sunstrider 2 on what turned out to be the first of many missions as a glorified bounty hunter, licensed and paid by Parliament to clear up the Empire's more dangerous messes. Hazel was there too. She said she just went along to keep him company, and perhaps for a little action to keep herself from getting soft, but Owen liked to think she wasn't just bored without an enemy to fight. Though it had to be said, she'd never been one to sit around and contemplate the lilies of the field. Settling down to a peaceful and productive life like everyone else was exactly what she'd become an outlaw to avoid. She couldn't even get drunk and start fights in bars anymore. Everyone knew who she was, and was scared witless of saying anything that might upset her. She dealt with pestering news teams by putting down landmines and hidden man traps outside her lodgings, but even that grew boring after a while. So when Random contacted her and offered her a commission to track down and possibly execute missing war criminals, she went for it in a heartbeat and wasted no time in persuading Owen to join her, even if she seemed to remember it as the other way around. But then that was Hazel for you, never happier than when she could lay the blame on someone else. The AI Ozymandias murmured in Owen's ear.
We just dropped out of hyperspace over Viramond, currently maintaining high orbit and all shields. I really didn't know why you wanted to come back here, Owen. I mean, it's not as if you have any friends here anymore. In fact, I might have to say that the likelihood of our ending up riddled with holes increases geometrically with every second we are dumb enough to stay here.
Nag, nag, nag. Owen subvocalized so that Hazel wouldn't hear. She didn't approve of him talking to an AI that was supposed to be dead.
You never want to go anywhere fun, Oz. This is where our current quarry has gone to ground, so here we are too. Right now, Valentine Wolfe is down there somewhere, along with certain aristocratic cronies, all of whom the current authorities would dearly like to see standing in a dock or hanging from a rope, preferably both. Hell, if we bring back Valentine Wolfe's head, they'll probably name a public holiday after us. Besides, I always said that one day I'd come home to Viramond.
There had been a time, and not that long ago, when Owen Deathstalker had been lord of the whole planet of Viramond. And then the Empress Lionstone outlawed him and took it all away. His own security people had tried to kill him for the reward on his head, and he'd had to flee for his life. He nearly hadn't made it, but Hazel had arrived at just the right moment to save his aristocratic ass, as she never tired of reminding him, and they'd been together ever since. He'd fallen in love with her. He still wasn't sure how she felt about him. His cousin David had been made lord in his absence and had taken over the Deathstalker family standing, the ancient stone castle of his clan, but he died there not long after trying to defend the planet from Lionstone's troops, led by Valentine Wolfe. The Wolf had overseen the murder of millions of defenseless people and the utter destruction of what had been a beautiful rural paradise. And now Valentine had returned, like a criminal to the scene of his crime, or a dog to its own droppings, and Owen had come back too, to bring belated justice to the destroyer of Viramond, one way or another. He sighed quietly to himself. Through all his rebel wanderings, he'd always clung to the secret hope that someday he would be able to return home and take up his old life again, a quiet scholar and minor historian of no real importance to anyone but himself. But time and necessity had made him a warrior, in spite of his intentions. He'd changed so much he wasn't sure he recognized himself anymore. And given the reports he'd seen of the devastation awaiting him below, he wasn't even sure there was a home to return to. He subvocalized to his AI.
Run sensor scan. Locate my old standing and see what kind of force they've got protecting it.
Way ahead of you, as usual. There's a fair-sized army surrounding the castle, which according to the comm traffic I'm picking up, Valentine and his associates are currently occupying. Typical. Nothing but the best for dear Valentine. And according to the information we were given before we left Golgotha, which I'll wager good money you haven't even looked at, there's also a hell of a lot of scientific equipment down there, along with scientists to run it. Though no one seems to know what it is or why it's there.
Don't get uppity, Oz. Just tell me what I need to know.
Bully.
Owen wasn't quite sure where he stood with Oz. The original Ozymandias had been the family AI, handed down to Owen from his deceased father. It turned out to contain hidden Empire programming, and had acted as a spy for Lionstone, before finally turning on Owen and trying to enslave him with control words it had secretly placed in his subconscious. Owen had no choice but to use his maze-given powers to destroy the AI. Except that sometime later, Oz came back. Or a voice in his head that only he could hear, claiming to be the AI Ozymandias. Certainly it was just as knowledgeable and irritating as the original. Owen had accepted the situation for the time being, for as long as the AI remained useful. He hadn't the faintest idea how to get rid of the voice anyway. Besides, he'd missed Oz.
So, do I start the descent or not? We're fully cloaked, but there's no telling how long even Aidman shields will hold up against the more than state-of-the-art security systems Valentine's installed here. What used to be borrowed standard weather control satellites have been upgraded with really heavy-duty sensors and more weaponry than your average fleet cruiser. When the Wolf says do not disturb, he means it.
Maintain orbit. I want a really good idea of what to expect, Dirtside, before I commit us to a landing. Scan the area surrounding the standing, 10-mile radius, and report on the local population's situation.
Erwin? I've already done that. There is no local population.
What?
I've scanned the surrounding areas to the limit of my senses. There isn't a single living soul outside of the standing for hundreds of miles. I'm sorry, Owen.
Owen shook his head slowly. He'd read the reports on Valentine's destruction of Viramond, watched Toby Schreck's filmed coverage, seen interviews with a few survivors to get off planet, but he'd always assumed they were exaggerated. No one could oversee the murder of a whole planet's population just for the fun of it. Not even Valentine Wolf. He couldn't believe that. Wouldn't believe it. Deep down, part of him had desperately wanted to return home to the cheers of his people, overjoyed to have their rightful lord back at last. He'd wanted to apologize for not being there to protect them when the Empire forces came. Wanted to promise them that things would be different now he was back. He'd keep them safe now, guard them from all harm. They'd never be hurt again because he was off somewhere else being a hero of the rebellion. There was so much he'd wanted, needed to say.
What's the matter? Is there a problem?
No, I was just thinking about the way things used to be here.
Don't. That's always been your problem, Deathstalker. Always living in the past.
I understand the past. Things were simpler then. I knew my world and my empire and my place in it. Or thought I did. Since then, I've seen the destruction of everything I ever believed in, lost everything I ever cared for. And now to top it all, I find I can't go home again. Because Valentine Wolf burned it all down and pissed on the ashes. Viramond is dead.
We can't know that for sure till we get down there and check for ourselves. Reports can be exaggerated. Sensors can be mistaken. It's a big world, Owen. He can't have killed everything.
And if he has? If he's done everything he's supposed to have done?
Then we cut his black heart out, throw it on the ground, and stamp on it. And the same goes for everyone with him.
Life's always been so simple for you, hasn't it, Hazel? good guys and bad guys, and a direct, forceful answer to every problem. But you heard the man at the briefing. Even after all he's done, there are still powers that be who want Valentine brought back alive for a show trial. If only because they could sell hollow rights for a small fortune.
I keep up with things. And for every faction that wants the wolf brought back alive, I'll bet I can name 10 who'd very much rather he came back with flies buzzing round him. Not least the Clone and Esper Undergrounds. If word ever got out that Valentine Wolf had once been a supporter of the Undergrounds, played an active part even, they'd lose what little popularity they have. On top of that, there are any number of people who struck questionable deals with him in the past and don't want it coming out now they've recreated themselves as pure-hearted cheerleaders of the Rebellion.
That's why we're going to bring the bastard back alive. Not necessarily in one piece, but definitely alive. I'm no man's puppet, and no organization's either. I need to send a signal that no one pressures me. And I won't kill him just because I want to. That's the old way, the Empire way. It's everything I fought to overthrow.
You and your damned conscience. All right, so we try and take him alive. What about his supporters?
Massacre the lot, for all I care.
Now you're talking.
Owen leaned back in his chair, interlocked his fingers, and stared at them thoughtfully. He wasn't always a monster, you know, Valentine. I knew him in his younger days. We were children together, moved in the same circles, went to the same parties. He seemed quite normal then. Nothing out of the ordinary. No sign, then, of the psychopath he became. Just another kid, perhaps a little quieter than most. Much like me. We were never actually friends, but I can remember good times we had together. And then we went our separate ways to be trained as a wolf and a death stalker, and I didn't see him again for years. Sometimes I find myself wondering how two very similar children became such different adults.
People change, whether they want to or not. Life writes our scripts. And we just get to ad-lib now and again.
Why, Hazel, that was almost profound.
Don't you patronize me, Deathstalker. I have a mind. I have read the occasional book in my time, when there was nothing else to do. I just meant that even while we're busy changing the universe, it's busy changing us. Look at you. You're not the person you used to be, even a few years ago, thank God. The Owen Deathstalker I saved from certain death down below was a very different man from the official hero who toppled an empire.
I know. That bothers me.
Don't worry about it. He really was a stuck-up little prig.
Huh. Then why did you stick with him?
I thought I saw potential in him.
I thought much the same about you. He frowned again.
Oh, hell, Owen, now what? I swear, you know more ways to depress yourself than anyone I've ever met.
I was just thinking about Finley Campbell. We should have included him on this trip.
We've been through this, Owen. The man is obsessed. He's sworn a vendetta against Valentine, sworn to kill the man, on his blood and on his honor. If we're to keep our options open down there, we can't afford to have the Campbell anywhere near us. He's always been erratic. They tried using him as a bounty hunter, but he always brought them back dead, sometimes in pieces. Last I heard, his girlfriend Evangeline was trying to get him interested in politics. God help Parliament, that's all I can say.
He fought beside us. He was a hero of the Rebellion, just like you and me. And he has as much right to Valentine's head as we do. Valentine wiped out his whole family. It doesn't feel right keeping this from him.
Oh, and we hardly know the man. You're the one who wants to bring Valentine in alive. If the Campbell was here...
Yes, I know. But if we're keeping secrets from people who are supposed to be our comrades, what might they be keeping from us?
Hell, everyone's got secrets.
She only realized how that sounded after she'd said it, and she held her breath for a moment before Owen grunted and turned away to study the sensor readings on the main display screen. Hazel let her breath out slowly so Owen wouldn't hear it and tried to relax. There were still things she was keeping from Owen, partly because she didn't want him getting upset, and partly because she still believed in keeping her business to herself. Ever since she'd first passed through the madness maze on the Wolfling world, had been changed forever, she'd been having problems with dreams. To begin with, they were just disturbing images she could forget with a little effort. But more and more these days, the dreams persisted into her waking world, and she couldn't push aside the thought that they meant something. Something important. She was dreaming every night now, clear and distinct, and she couldn't tell if she was seeing the past or the future. It was as though time were unraveling in her head in the darkest hours of the night, when her defenses were at their weakest. Something in her mind was showing her things and wouldn't let her look away.
While on Mistworld, she dreamed of the Empire invasion, hours before it actually happened. Last night, there had been three dreams, one after the other. First, she dreamed of the Bloodrunners, the evil inhabitants of the Dark Obia worlds, far out on the rim where no one ever went, who'd once tried to kidnap her for their never-ending experiments into the nature of suffering and existence. Owen had saved her then, reaching out with his mind across countless light years to strike down their leader with a terrible bloody hand. In her dream, they looked at her with knowing, cruel eyes, watching and waiting with unnerving patience. They held something in their hands, something sharp. Then she dreamed of Owen's family standing on Viramond. She'd walked the empty stone corridors with easy familiarity, though she'd never been there before. It was bitter cold, the cold of the grave, and blood trickled down the walls, staining the ancient tapestries and exquisite carpets. There was someone waiting round the next corner, and far down below, something awful. And finally, she dreamed she stood alone on the bridge of Sunstrider 2, while all hell broke out around her. There were ships attacking from every side, ships beyond counting, overwhelming her defenses, even as she fought frantically to hold them back. All the alarms were sounding, and the Sunstrider's guns fired again and again. There was no sign of Owen anywhere. Past, present, and future? Maybe. But were they predictions? Or just warnings? Did they mean she had a chance to change things? Rewrite history? Defy destiny? Or was she just going crazy, like everyone else around her? There had been a time when the forbidden drug blood had helped her cope with many things, including the dreams, but she'd moved beyond that. She'd been so physically transformed from what she used to be, she doubted blood would even make a dent in her body chemistry these days. Besides, blood was heavily addictive, and she was damned if anything or anyone was ever going to have control over her again, and that very definitely included her own weaknesses. Hazel was determined to distract herself.
What do you suppose Valentine and his cronies are up to down there?
Beats the hell out of me.
Owen was still studying the data scrolling past him on the view screen. The data was moving far too fast for normal eyes to follow, but neither of them mentioned it. They were used to small changes like that.
He's reinforced the standing shield. I'm not picking up anything useful, which is in itself significant. He shouldn't have access to anything strong enough to keep out Hayden and the Zion sensors. So who's been supplying him with tech?
We'll have to ask him when we get down there.
Too many questions. Too many unknowns. Why did he return here? Why did he take over my old home? What did he hope to achieve here that was so important he was willing to risk me coming after him?
He's here for a specific purpose. Has to be, or he couldn't have persuaded so many people to come with him. Valentine's never had any friends, only allies. And somebody must have paid for his new shields and all that fancy equipment he's supposed to have with him. He's cut off from his family funds now. If you ask me, it's probably something to do with drugs. Everything with Valentine turns out to be something to do with drugs.
Or revenge. He's a wolf, after all. And Oz says his security systems are advanced far beyond anything he should have access to.
You're still hearing voices, aren't you?
I do wish you wouldn't put it like that. And it's only one voice.
Is that supposed to reassure me? At this rate, you'll be saying you only overthrew the Empire because the devil told you to. That's going to go down really well with the general populace.
It's just my old AI.
Then why can't I hear it on my comm system? Why can't anyone else hear it? And you were convinced you'd killed the bloody thing after it betrayed us on the Wolfling world.
I thought it was dead. I'm not as sure about a lot of things as I used to be. After all, you and I have been through much that should have killed us, haven't we?
Hazel had no quick answer to that. She felt the same way too, most of the time. They stared at each other in an uncomfortable silence for a long moment.
Oz, what the hell's going on?
You can't say I didn't warn you. Valentine's security systems have finally broken through our cloaking shields, and the armed satellites are throwing everything they've got at us, which is actually quite considerable. You wouldn't believe how many disruptor cannon Valentine's managed to cram into what used to be a weather control satellite. Main shields are holding, for the moment. Do I have your permission to return fire?
Of course you bloody do. Blow the nearest satellites out of the sky and then get us dirtside as fast as you can.
Landing coordinates?
Not too far from the standing. Walking distance.
How about time you got some healthy exercise? You've been putting on weight.
Well, what's happening?
Valentine knows we're here, and the voice in my head now thinks it's my mother. I'm bringing the ship down fast. Grab onto something and pray for a soft landing.
Hell with that. I want to get some shots of my own in first.
Why bother? They're just satellites following the programming.
God, you're a wimp sometimes, Deathstalker. It's the principle of the thing.
And off she went, up to the bridge to plug herself into the fire systems. Owen let her go. He didn't see the point in personally firing the ship's disruptors at targets the ship's computers were perfectly capable of dealing with. Owen had run hundreds of similar simulations in his time, back when his father was still determined to turn his reluctant scholarly son into the warrior the family history demanded. He didn't feel like going through all that again. He strapped himself into his chair and waited patiently. At least the Sunstrider II had decent guns. The original yacht hadn't, but it had been shot at often enough to make Owen wish that it had. The first Sunstrider spent most of its short life being chased from one world to another, often holed and on fire, until it finally crash-landed in the deadly jungles of Chandrakor. When he had the new yacht built around the salvaged engines of the old, Owen had insisted the Haydenmen install as many state-of-the-art weapon systems as the craft could hold. He didn't like having to run. It wasn't in his nature. The ship lurched again. Something really nasty slammed through the energy shields and impacted on the reinforced hull, which was not supposed to happen. Owen decided his proper place was on the bridge after all. Defense computers could only do so much. He ran all the way, but still had enough breath left when he got there to demand of Hazel what the hell was going on.
Damned if I know, Deathstalker. I've never encountered firepower like this, at least not from any human tech.
Owen dropped into the seat beside her and quickly studied the tactical displays. Main shields were still holding, but they were taking a hell of a battering. There was some damage to the outer hull, mostly superficial. The Haydenmen knew how to build a ship.
This shouldn't be happening. The Haydenmen assured me we could stand off everything up to and including an Empire Star Cruiser.
Should've got it in writing, Stud. Maybe Valentine made a deal with the Haydenmen too. Or he's been talking to Shub or even the aliens. Selling out all humanity for simple personal gain is exactly the kind of thing you'd expect from Valentine Wolf. Either way, we are in over our heads and sinking fast. Suggestions of a practical nature are urgently invited. Also prayers.
To hell with trying to fight it out. Throw as much power as you can into the shields and get us down fast, Oz. Hopefully the satellites are only programmed to hit things in a predetermined area. Once we've dropped below their response level, they should leave us alone. And then let us all hope Valentine hasn't also invested in some ground defenses.
Sounds like a plan to me. Can I make the landing?
No, let Oz do it. I've seen your landings, Hazel.
Spoil sport.
The Sunstrider II plunged screaming through the atmosphere, wreathed in flames, until finally it fell out of range of the satellites and the attack cut off. Owen and Hazel braced themselves for ground responses, but there were none. Apparently, Valentine had expected his souped-up satellites to be all that was needed to discourage visitors. With any other ship, he'd probably have been right. Oz finally eased off the steep descent and searched out a landing spot not too far from the standing. Owen allowed himself to relax a little.
It would seem Valentine has powerful new allies, which is something of a surprise, as I would have thought he'd run out of options by now. I wonder what other treats he has in store for us.
Something nasty, no doubt, knowing Valentine. But it doesn't matter what fools he's persuaded to back him or what new toys he's got. We can handle it.
Don't get cocky. Valentine hasn't survived this long by leaving anything to chance. He must have known I'd be coming after him once he set up shop here. He must have made preparations.
There's nothing he can throw at us that we can't throw right back at him. I could have handled those satellites eventually if you hadn't chickened out. Nothing can harm us anymore, Owen. Not after all we've been through.
Cocky, definitely cocky. It'll end in tears.
He would have said more if navigation hadn't chimed discreetly, alerting him that the Sunstrider II was coming in for a landing. Owen and Hazel studied the short and long-range sensor displays carefully, but the ship touched down without incident. Oz made them wait while he ran through his landing checklist.
Air quality, tolerable. Cold for the time of year, but within acceptable limits. No life signs. All right, it's now officially safe to disembark. For old time's sake, I put down at the exact spot where Hazel first encountered you, Owen. Just call me a silly old sentimentalist.
Shut up, Oz.
They made their way down to the airlock, and then Owen waited patiently while Hazel weighed herself down with more guns and ammunition belts. For all her claims of invulnerability, Hazel never really felt comfortable going out in public unless she was carrying more guns than the average armed patrol group. She preferred projectile weapons to energy guns, mostly, probably because they were bigger and heavier and had more bits to fiddle with. Owen leaned against the steel bulkhead and remembered how things had been the first time he'd met Hazel Dark. He'd been on the run from his own security guards, badly wounded, fleeing desperately in a damaged flyer. They shot him down only a few miles from his standing. It had been a bad crash, and he'd been lucky to survive it. He'd staggered away from the burning wreckage, bleeding profusely, and set his back against a nearby tree to hold him up while he made his last stand. He felt like shit and his head was swimming madly, but he was still able to appreciate the great green field stretching away before him. Viramond had always been a very beautiful world. And then Hazel had appeared out of nowhere to save him from his enemies, cutting them down like a glorious, if somewhat shop-soiled, Valkyrie, and together they'd escaped Viramond in the first Sunstrider. Owen had not been back since. He'd always meant to, but the rebellion never gave him time. He'd spent his childhood on a dozen different planets, as his father darted around the Empire pursuing endless intrigues. But Viramond had been his and his alone, his world, his haven from a family and a warrior's destiny he'd never wanted. The only place he'd ever thought of as home.
Come on, Stud, let's get this show on the road. I haven't killed anyone in hours and I'm starting to get twitchy.
And now here was Hazel, large as life and twice as dangerous, carrying enough guns to start her own war. Owen had to smile.
What's so funny?
Oh, nothing. It's just that according to Oz, we've touched down at the exact spot where you and I first met.
Where I saved your ass, you mean?
That's not how I remember it.
You always were too nostalgic for your own good, Deathstalker. Crack that airlock and let's get our feet dirty. I didn't come all this way just to stand around.
You don't have a single romantic bone in your body, do you, Hazel?
For which I thank the good Lord daily. Romance just gets in the way of doing the job.
Owen sighed and opened the airlock. Viramond's air wafted in, and Owen took a deep breath, expecting the old familiar sense of grass and earth and growing things. Instead, he coughed harshly as his lungs were filled with hot, dry air choked with dust. It smelled like something long dead. Owen and Hazel looked at each other, and then Owen stepped cautiously out onto the planet he had once owned. The sky was dark and overcast, the light gray and lifeless. Where once there had been green fields and the rich foliage of rambling woods, now there was only churned up mud for as far as he could see in any direction. No fields or crops or low stone boundary walls, just the mud, dark and gritty with trodden in ashes. For a moment, Owen thought he must have come to the wrong planet. Nowhere on the pastoral world of Viramond had ever looked like this. But of course it did now. Just as he'd always known it would, deep down. He'd read the reports, seen the hollow Toby Schreck had presented on Imperial News. He just hadn't wanted to believe it. He needed to believe that some part of his peaceful past still existed, untouched, with some link remaining, with the quiet scholar he used to be.
Damn. I'm sorry, Owen. I know how much this place meant to you.
I think the trees were over there. He tried to point, but his arm seemed very heavy. Right over there. But they're gone now. It's all gone. Everything. Nothing to show they or we were ever here. They even took my past away from me. And it's all my fault.
How the hell do you work that out?
I was lord of this world. This planet and everyone on it were given to me and put under my protection. But I went away and left them defenseless when the Empire's wolves came. I wasn't here when they needed me.
Now that is bullshit. They threw you out. Your own security people turned against you. You were outlawed. And you can be damn sure there wasn't a man or a woman here who wouldn't have cheerfully sold you out in a moment for the price on your head. Your cousin David was lord here after you, and he couldn't even save himself when the Empire forces came. Hell, he was one of them, and they killed him anyway.
You're right. But it doesn't help. I should have been here.
Then you'd be dead too. Is that what you want?
Sometimes. The old me is dead. I lost him somewhere down the long rebel trail that led to Lionstone's court. I miss him. I liked him a lot better than the killing machine I've become. I look inside myself, and I can't find any trace of him anymore.
Don't start that again. Change isn't death.
It was for Viramond. This used to be a food planet. The crops and livestock we raised here fed people all across the Empire. Who'll feed them now? Look at it, Hazel. They killed this world.